He shot up from his chair and stepped out onto the sidewalk to greet her. "Señorita Hernández," Noble said in his best Spanish, "I am so happy to see you again."
"It was so gracious of you to meet me, Señor Yamagata," she said. "Please call me Nobo," he replied as he held her chair for her.
She sat and took off the sunglasses. Her eyes were wondrously beautiful.
"Yes, I remember from the dinner we had. It was a delightful evening.
I am pleased that you enjoyed it."
A robot waiter glided to their table, and after asking Lucita what she wanted to drink, Nobo pecked out an order for a Cuba Libre and another Kirin on the robot's keyboard.
"You are also Dan Randolph's friend, are you not?" Lucita asked him.
Nobo nodded.
"I admire him very much. He and my father worked together many years ago. I have known him for as long as I can remember. The American who worked harder than any Japanese."
She smiled, but he saw that it was tinged with sadness.
"Dan Randolph is in great danger."
"He is aware of that," Nobo replied. "He laughs about it."
"It is not a laughing matter."
The waiter returned, bearing their drinks on its flat top. Nobo put them on their table and placed his empty beer bottle on the waiter, then inserted his credit card into the robot's slot. It made a rapid series of clicks, then the card popped out again, and Nobo retrieved it.
As the machine rolled away, Lucita said urgently, "The Russians are preparing to arrest Dan. He must stop these hijackings at once, or else they will take him to Moscow and hang him."
"But he's a citizen of Venezuela. They can't..."
"That won't stop them. My father will allow them to do whatever they want. No matter what it costs him, my father has thrown in his hand with the Russians."
"Dan's aboard Nueva Venezuela right now. He's not scheduled to return until Friday."
"Have him return to Japan," Lucita urged. "Go to the space station yourself and take him back to Japan with you. He will be safe there, I think. Safer than here."
"That may be possible," Nobo murmured. "And above all, make him stop these raids on the Russian spaceships. Don't let him do anything that they can arrest him for."
Shrugging, Nobo replied,
"Have you ever tried to make him do something he does not want to do?"
Despite herself, Lucita smiled at him.
"Yes, I know how stubborn he can be, but you must make him stop, for his own good."
Hunching forward over the little table and lowering his voice, Nobo said, "A team of astronauts left yesterday to intercept one of the freighters. They will be back tomorrow."
"Then make that the last one," Lucita whispered. "For God's sake, don't let him do any more, or they'll kill him."
Noble straightened up in his chair. "I will go to Nueva Venezuela myself this afternoon. I will tell him everything that you have told me."
"I will go with you," Lucita said.
"I don't think.
I must, please. Let me go to him."
He studied her face, so earnest, so pleading.
She loves Dan, Nobo realized.
He thought he should feel surprised, or perhaps even a little resentful. He felt neither. It seemed completely logical to him that the most beautiful young woman in Caracas should be totally in love with Dan Randolph. So logical and natural that he could not be resentful about it, no matter how much he wanted this lovely woman to love him. But out of the corner of his eye, he caught the frantic racing of the monkeys through the trees of Bolivar Square, and saw the patient, plodding, inexorable sloths hanging from their branches like hairy growths. It occurred to Nobuhiko that the sloths must live much longer lives than the monkeys. Yes, he realized, the monkeys must die young while the sloths survive indefinitely.
Chapter 32. A silver tray bearing his untouched dinner sat on a corner of Vasily Malik's desk. A single lamp burned on the desktop, throwing a pool of light over its surface. The rest of his office lay deep in shadow. Chairs and the long conference table that extended from his desk like the upright length of a letter T were lost in darkness. Only the massive silver samovar in the corner by the television set glinted a reflection of the desk lamp. Outside the curtained windows, snow was falling in the evening gloom. Moscow was ablaze with lights, and from these office windows one could see the Kremlin in all its barbaric splendor. But Malik kept the windows tightly curtained. He had no desire to gaze out at the onion-shaped domes and high walls.
He took no pleasure in watching the automobile traffic inching through Red Square. Nor did he wish to allow anyone to see through the windows and into his private office. The windows stayed closed and covered, day and night. There was one other person in the darkened office with him, a small, lean, nervous man of about 40, balding with a pencil-thin mustache and the long, slim fingers of a born pianist. He wore a gray suit. His blue tie was carefully knotted and his collar tightly buttoned. An American cigarette dangled from the corner of his thin lips, and he squinted against the rising smoke as he peered at the computer screen on Moloch's desk. Moloch, wearing a comfortable, loose-fitting peasant's blouse over his expensive blue jeans, took a cigarette of his own from the cedar wood box on his desk and fitted it to his ivory holder as he said, "Where the two lines intersect, Lermontov, that's the freighter that they're after." Lermontov was the KGB officer assigned to Moloch. When the chief of the space program traveled outside his office, Lermontov was his chauffeur, or sometimes his valet, but he was always in reality Moloch's bodyguard and watchdog, and an unbreakable link that connected directly with the Minister for State Security. He stared at the graph lines on the glowing computer screen. "How can you be sure?" Moloch lit his cigarette and savored it for a moment before answering. "According to the tape we received from Caracas an hour ago, the Yankee capitalist has already sent out a team of pirates. They left yesterday and are expected back tomorrow. Our radar surveillance of Nueva Venezuela fixed the time of departure of four of their small ships. That's this point here." He tapped the screen with his index fingernail.
"I see," Lermontov replied.
"Their ships are too small to track with radar for very great distances," Moloch resumed, "but the very fact that four of them together sailed out of radar range is proof enough for me. There's only one ore freighter that they can reach soon enough to be back by tomorrow." He tapped the screen again. "This one."
"Then that will be your Trojan horse."
"Exactly." Moloch reached for the phone on his desktop. "We must get a team of soldiers to that freighter tonight."
"Can you get them there in time?"
"It will take a high-energy launch from the Northern Cosmodrome in Plesetsk. But I've had the troops and a launching crew standing by for more than a week. They'll get there in time. There may be a few bloody noses from the launch acceleration, but they'll make it in time."
He spoke urgently into the phone, then hooked it into the receptacle on the side of the computer. Data flowed automatically to Plesetsk in an inhumanly rapid series of high-pitched beeps and squeaks. To Moloch, it sounded like dolphins conversing. Lermontov leaned back in his chair.
"Won't the pirates see your soldiers coming up to the freighter and be frightened away?"
With a self-satisfied smile, Moloch answered, "The pirates have been very clever about foiling our radars, using electronic countermeasures to make themselves virtually invisible to us. Well, two can play at that game. They won't see the troops, I promise you. To them, the freighter will look totally innocent and unprotected."
The KGB officer nodded, apparently content.
"By this time tomorrow, Dan Randolph will be on his way to Moscow in fetters. And the space station Nueva Venezuela will be in our hands. Within a week, we will be occupying all the so-called Third World space stations and rounding up all their piratical crews. The committee will be very pleased with you."
"I should hope so," Moloch thought about breaking out the vodka. But he remembered that this apostle of state security did not drink.
"Time to celebrate later, after the victory is actually in our grasp," he thought. "You've been skating on thin ice these past few weeks," Lermontov said. "People were starting to worry about your future." "I've been playing for high stakes," Moloch shot back. "This has been more than an annoying series of raids, you know. From the very beginning, I knew that I had to eliminate the last vestiges of the capitalists in space. It wasn't enough to drive the United States government out of space. The capitalists, like Randolph, simply went elsewhere. Like cockroaches scuttling away from the fumigator."
Moloch laughed. "You should have been a poet. But you're right. Now we can round up all of them, take over their orbital factories, and eliminate the last shreds of capitalism from space."
"And from Earth," Lermontov added.
"Ah, yes. From Earth, too, eventually," Moloch agreed. Lermontov puffed happily on his cigarette.
"There is one additional thing to be done," Moloch said, "and I need your help in doing it."
"What is that?"
"I need four hydrogen bombs."
What? Raising a hand to placate